welcome to the Tortoise Shack Sunday special. This is our weekly roundup of the events of the week, some of the stories that pass slightly under the radar because there's always some other crisis that we're all looking towards, and our catch up with you, our patrons and supporters. So back to it. If you want to come to these events, obviously it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and it's the price of a cup of coffee a month, but it really helps us keep going, and you know what, it's a bit of fun as well. This morning, I'm joined by Linda Hayden from the Pack Woman podcast, whose latest episode is out this morning, and it's with
Mary Ryan O'Brien.
I always mispronounce it, but it's the adoptee view on the Mother and Baby Home Report, and I would recommend you go and have a listen. It's well worth a listen. Also joined by Martin McMahon, and I would not recommend you listen to him at all. And our friend in Ackle, Saoirse McHugh, is also here with us this morning. Just want to kick things off. Basically, Martin, I'm going to go to you. The week that was, we saw the tarnished back under fire for his leaking of a document that he admitted that he leaked to his friend Matthew O'Toole. Have you paid much attention to it, or do you think it's he's going to get away with it just because it's old news?
I did pay attention to it. Do I think he's going to? He may get away with it right now, right this minute. But you know, the idea that he can be Taoiseach again, I mean, he's a tarnished character. We simply cannot have somebody like him. I'm going to go Gareth Fitzgerald on this, and I'm going to say he's of the wrong caliber, and we shouldn't have him in politics. You can't trust him, and if you can't trust him, he shouldn't be Taoiseach. It's that simple.
Linda, have you a view on it?
How many times do we have to say he broke the Official Secrets Act? Like, he actually broke the law and lied about breaking the law. And, you know, we still have to see what happens with the SIPO investigation into it that Piers Doherty had instigated. So I think he'll get away with it, but I don't think he should get away with it. Like, he has broken the law.
The interesting part where you say that he's broken the law now is we've seen officially now this week that it has been, you know, it was in the Irish Examiner that the police are looking into it. They have taken witness statements, and they have actually taken the devices, i.e. the phones that the messages were sent backwards and forwards from. So, you know, that's a pretty serious thing that's going on. I mean, the tarnisher, who was then Taoiseach, they're looking into it. They are actually, sorry, Saoirse, did you want to say something?
No, it's like, obviously it's, I think I agree with Linda there in that obviously he shouldn't be Taoiseach and he shouldn't get away with it. But like, of course he will. Look at Seamus Wolfe. It was like a load of other people applied for the job. The minister wasn't even told about them or didn't pass it on, and just gave their mate the job, and everyone's like, oh, and, all right. You know, and it's like, and he's Supreme Court judge now forever.
And he's back in, and you're absolutely right to point it out. But there's one interesting point that one overlap on that are the people that Leo Varadkar has damaged. He's also damaged Simon Harris, because Simon Harris, as we've seen from this week, couldn't even get a copy of it when Dr. Matthew O'Toole had a copy of it. And Simon Harris took to his feet and defended Leo Varadkar while he was putting forward his version of events. Pascal Donoghue and Helen McEntee went out front. They did interviews on RTE, on News Talk, and they gave a version of events that we know now factually don't stack up. So yeah, no, I do think he's really, really damaged.
He should be suspended.
But the person he's damaging most is Micheál Martin. That's who he's damaging most, you know. And like it or lump it, Varadkar's in charge, even though Micheál Martin is Taoiseach. And it's so blatantly, apparently clear that Micheál Martin can't make a decision without the nod from Leo Varadkar. It's so blatant. And things have to be negotiated in government with Leo Varadkar. I mean, Micheál Martin's Taoiseach. He should say, shut up, sit down, I'm the boss.
And the thing is that Varadkar knows that.
Yeah. Is he just afraid of another election, is it?
I think so. I genuinely think so. We can't really have an election right now. And when you know, is a big question. But this is a dead duck government going forward. Micheál Martin has no power control. It's, and then you have the Greens as well as Leo Varadkar arguing against control at the airports.
Hang on, we'll get to that later. Yeah, we'll stop. You're going on a solo run. I want to point out what Rona McCord has made a really good point from the trade union movement's point of view, that it is very difficult to have a minister who's over trade and enterprise and employment negotiating in good faith on contracts that are coming forward when he's been shown to not have credibility in doing that. I do think that is a really important point, that if I was negotiating with the guy, I'd want to know who he's running a side negotiation with. And he, there's no doubt about it. He's absolutely toxic when it comes to that sort of dealing with employers and employees going forward, and that's just a fact now. You can't debate that. I do want to move on, and Sasha, I want to come to you because we saw yesterday. I'll go back to midweek. We saw a really good webinar was hosted about the problems with CETA, about the issues that are still outstanding with it, and how these improvements that we were all told, you know, look, there have been improvements, they don't actually exist. It's just woolly language around it. And yesterday, then, the Greens made another run at convincing their members to support it. What's your feeling on the last few days in terms of it?
Well, the Greens are definitely going to support it. I don't think, like, that meeting that was had for the Greens yesterday, it wasn't about trying to get the members to support it. I think it was just to make it look like they were trying to get the members to support it. There was no vote. It's really irrelevant. From what I've heard, everybody, like, they had Philippe Lambert and a few other European Greens, they all excoriated CETA, even though some of them had voted for CETA in Luxembourg, I think, but had done so and had extracted, you know, other things out of their coalition partners in exchange for that. Apparently, it was just Eamon and there's a councillor, Hazel Smith. Like, apparently, they were the only two who've been like, this is great, actually. You know, this is fantastic. So it remains to be seen what will happen. Like, I assume it's going to be a rota voting system again. It's not, it's like the full government isn't voting, the full Dáil isn't voting. And, you know, the last time it only was postponed last time because two of the TDs that were rotated to vote had enough pressure put on them that they said they wouldn't vote for it. So really, like, if I was Eamon, and it looks like it's going to be what happens, he's just going to make sure that it's TDs he know will vote for it voting. I was just reading, Attractive Brin put up a really good post about it, and I couldn't believe, like, one part of it said, she was talking about how Ireland has protection as long as our terms are fair and equitable. Like, a company can't sue you for anything. But there's four blank pages that can be added to in terms of what counts as unfair and inequitable. So it's like, you sign now and then, like, you wouldn't sign any contract. You wouldn't sign a mobile phone contract with four blank pages. And to think we'd sign up into something that we're in for a minimum 20 years. Like, I do think the Greens will do it. I've been surprised that there's no, there doesn't seem to be any public pushback from Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael grassroots at all. Like, you know, this isn't just a Green issue. Mm-hmm. I've been really disappointed. I thought at least Fianna Fáil, there might be a bit of pushback from it, but
They got their talking points when the last bit of controversy kicked off about it, because I wrote to several of them and I got the same reply, almost copy and pasted, you know, verbatim about, and it was about these reassurances that they were seeking and that they had changed it was now going to be a friendlier investor court services, you know, our lads, what planet are we on? But in terms of the Greens specifically, and I mean this honestly, and again, I'm speaking in a personal capacity here. If you're going to hang on in government on that basis, it's pretty clear that your actual dedication, if you think it's hard to win on this, try and win on the causes that you really care for. And they're not extracting a price. Therefore, they've actually invalidated their vote, which is really, really hard on people that actually showed a bit of faith. Martin, sorry.
I don't think they invalidated their vote. I think you're now seeing what their vote is. It's the affluent gardener vote. And that's what you're saying.
A lot more than that voted for them, though.
Well, yeah. They haven't got them left now, have they? Let's be honest about it.
I don't know, Martin. I do think, I do think there are some people still within the Greens who did think, who did weigh up a lot. And, I don't think they thought there was, from my opinion, there wasn't enough in it. But there were a few people who I've seen who I argued over the PFG with who were like, hold on, this was not in it. So I do think there's another chunk still in the Greens who are shocked at this and maybe might leave now.
If it takes the seat of vote to pass for them to leave, it's too late. You've left it too late to leave at that stage. No amount of bicycle lanes equal one seated. That's it. Full stop. It doesn't matter how many bicycle lanes you get.
Yeah. It is. It is going to be coming back to the Florida Dáil. I would say do check out Attractive Rinse stuff on social media and do have a look at it. One thing I will say, which was quite disappointing, I saw people involved in some of the environmental NGOs this week beginning to softly sort of go, well, we might as well, because we'll let this through, but we'll fight Mercosur kind of mentality. And you know what, guys? You're not even worth your place in the environmental movement if that's going to be your attitude.
I saw that. I saw one person
who was a significant person in the environmental NGO network.
But I also did see the group he represents. Obviously, people running the Twitter accounts are still like, well, I'm against it still. Mm. So I'd say there's a bit of internal controversy there, but that was a bizarre interaction I was looking at on Twitter. He even kind of indicated that he knew CETA was in the program for government and was pushing for it.
Some of these individuals did support the program for government. Look, I'm gonna move us on. I do think people should be mindful that this is gonna go very quickly. One thing happened this week, which won't get much coverage. Actually, it got a little bit of a reference, and the reference it got was that a Fianna Fáiler had voted to agree with it in error, and that was the only kind of cover of it. Was that the European Parliament has effectively said yes? By the way, tax haven Ireland is tax haven Ireland officially, or official Ireland is a tax haven, so whatever way you want to phrase it, and we covered it in that way. But it just goes back to I like to say this all the time, Martin. You remember the OECD came out with a report about tax transparency, and Ireland got a green rating. It was a traffic light system, and they went through all the countries. And Pascal Donoghue stood on the plinth outside Leinster House and said this was proof positive that Ireland is not a tax haven. But that's not what the report said. It was reported that because Pascal came out and said, we're green, we're this, we got a green light. What the report actually said is Ireland was the only tax haven that actually met the criteria of tax transparency. So what that meant was we were the best. We were actually, what we do is so good that if you play by the rules, we will just charge you like a facilitation fee and maybe take a little bit off the top, but it's our tax laws, which is why they won the Apple ruling, which is why they won that, because it is, as we always say in this podcast, the crime is what's legal. And that is, we do legal tax avoidance, even if the rest of the world sees it as tax evasion. We get to say it's tax avoidance. Sorry, anybody want to make a point on that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of important that we keep an eye on that ball, because this bill come due thing, when bill comes due, you can be guaranteed that it's the little people who'll be picking up this bill. So all of those deals and agreements, all they're doing is putting an increased taxation burden on you, the little people. That's all it does.
Yeah, my biggest issue with it is they're sending inspectors into single mothers' homes to check if there's man's clothes there. And I heard a case where there was a trans son in the house, and there was questioning over the trans son's clothes. They're spending, 300,000 on a campaign, Welfare Cheats Cheat Us All. And they have people who are paying zero tax. Like, I know there are corporations out there paying less tax in a year than I am. So that sticks in my craw.
What I thought was really notable about it, and the two Green Irish MEPs abstained, which of course, because, whatever, they're in government, I assume that's why they did. And the Sinn Féin MEP abstained. And the response I heard was, oh, it was just, you know, political posturing, which is like classic Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael response. And it's like, yes, and so much of politics is exactly that. You know, of course, that's what politics, that I would argue that's what most of politics is. And so I was really disappointed to see Sinn Féin kind of chicken out of that.
Play domestic politics is what has happened there, and it's quite plain to see in many cases that this is what's going on. But I suppose to be quite frank about it, we've known for some time there's a reason why Ireland still continues in the middle of a pandemic to have one of the fastest growing economies in the world. It's because we use beggar thy neighbor as a policy, and it's very efficient. But it won't last forever. It will not last forever. I mean, Linda, you made the point about welfare cheats cheat us all as a campaign. I don't know if you saw that the Dutch government fell for something similar this week. You know, so doing that kind of stuff that was shown to be investigation into what is minuscule welfare cheat, welfare fraud, brought down a government. Here, it got a guy elected Taoiseach. It is a huge double standard. And it actually brings us on to the zero COVID debate. I don't know, Linda, have you watched this much this week, the debate about why we can't go for it or how we go for it?
I just can't get my head around what the reticence is around it, and, you know, why they just won't do what they're told. Like, Neffa know what they're talking about. You know, they've proven time and time again they know what they're talking about, and the government are just like, nah, no thanks. You know, like, and it can't be like at this point, like, everyone must see, even businesses must see the benefit of zero COVID. Like, I don't know, sorry.
Businesses do see the benefit of zero COVID. The problem is they don't trust government to deliver it. And that's they've seen this half-arsed response to the pandemic, and they expect this half-arsed response to continue. And it takes commitment to go to zero COVID. And nobody trusts this government to have the commitment, because they don't have commitment to do anything in particular except tick along until they get their pensions. And that's it. They're quite happy just to grab, and then they'll get their pensions. They know they're never going to get back in as the top parties ever again. I mean, that day has shifted. So it's a two-handed grab. They're not particularly worried about COVID. I mean, it's very clear when you listen to Micheál Martin and Varadkar's statements that, you know, people aren't front and center of their response. That's absolutely clear. They're not front and center.
I hate to do this, but I push back and say, in one sense, Leo Varadkar is doing good politics because he speaks for what he deems his electorate. I made the point this morning, I don't know if anybody saw the arrivals into Dublin Airport over the last 24 hours from the Canaries, from Dubai, from the Emirates, from these places where people to go get their winter sun. They all vote Fine Gael, boys and girls. You know, that's your affluent people who are probably just, you know, let's just say more prone to say, yeah, I don't want to do my 2-week quarantine. I'd rather be okay. And then on the flip side, you know, we saw months of, well, I saw someone in a working class community carrying a bag of cans. Let's all name and shame. So there is a large class element in some of this, but there's also a really disappointing thing from the medics' point of view. We keep hearing this going, we dodged a bullet yesterday, was said. The system is not overwhelmed. We've managed to do that. Talk to the medics right now and they will tell you they are overwhelmed. They've never seen it as bad. They're terrified. They're hoping. Go listen to what Cliona Ní Chealaigh said, where she said she's looking at people and she's just hoping they get better. She doesn't have the power to make people better. Like, it's so disheartening. And then, as you said, the narrative seems to have gone to, well, we dodged a bullet. The numbers are starting to come down. The R number is decreasing, and that just doesn't stack up. Sorsha, have you got any?
Yeah, like it does feel like zero COVID will, like, pursuing zero COVID is going to become inevitable. And so them kind of dragging their heels and having to be forced into it, like, this might be totally nuts, but like part of me is starting to think, like, is Varadkar just sabotaging Micheál Martin at this stage? Like, nothing else makes sense. Why would Micheál Martin not say, right, you know, Fine Gael is cornering the businesses, the Michael O'Leary vote, I need to get the rest of it. Why isn't he saying, okay, zero COVID? Why doesn't he want to be the Taoiseach who had Ireland up there with New Zealand and Australia? Like, it doesn't make any sense at all, unless he's being blackmailed or something. Like, I don't know. And, it, you know, it couldn't be something like that. But it's so crazy at this stage that...
But it's been reported in the press that Leo Varadkar was unhappy when Micheál Martin talked about enhancements to, you know, moving to a 5-day quarantine process, moving to the so that's out in the public domain. They're clearly, and that goes back to what Martin said, that, you know, you were saying that Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin don't care about the public good. I put it to you that one is kind of pushing, but he just doesn't have the power.
These guys have been electioneering since August, since Golfgate.
Tony, you're CEO of Ireland Inc. Are you going to let some whippersnapper who's got it wrong the whole time tell you what to do? Are you seriously going? You and I know that you just don't do this. You turn around, you say, shut up, put your phone down, I'm in charge. And that's absolutely what you do.
Absolutely. If you were in charge, you make the call and you drive it home. There's dithering going on, and it's costing lives. There's no question.
It's lack of leadership, and we've had this all along through this coalition, and it is the extreme lack of leadership. You have three partisan groups fighting with each other constantly, and you're not getting good governance of the country. They're not doing anybody any favours. But Micheál Martin was strong enough to ban smoking. And he was. And that point was made to us. And that was a big move that Micheál Martin made. There's nothing stopping him doing this move. People would actually support him in this move. But he just can't step on Varadkar toes because he's not really the Taoiseach. And there's the truth of it.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack, but I do think, Saoirse, I think you're right that it's inevitable that the public mood has moved so far beyond that it's in the discourse, and the politicians are usually led by what the public want. But the disaster that they've been so far, and it's made by, I see the point in the comments, the disaster that they are, they probably will pull it off so arse ways that they'll end up in worse off. But I go back to what Anthony Staines has said. The medics have done their job. The scientists have done their job. The virologists have done their job. The clinicians have done their job. And the public, in a large, giant, overwhelming majority, have done their job. The politicians have absolutely failed us. And that is a deficit of leadership. There are a couple of other things we want to get to just quite quickly. Linda, did you watch the inauguration?
I watched bits of it. Yeah, it was a funny thing about it. Like, there was a lot made about the fashion, and I'll come to that piece, that all the women were wearing monochrome. And I found out afterwards there's a reason for it. It's because they were expecting trouble. It would be easy for the Secret Service to be able to identify and pull them out. And likewise, all of the men wore dark colours and all looked very inconspicuous for the same reason. So, you know, it would be hard for somebody to identify them or take them out. So, it was very, it was great to see. Like, I just thought the whole thing was amazing. Like, every piece of it was amazing. And it was a real celebration of what's to come. But the just how it was and the atmosphere that it was done in was very telling. And even like the pettiness of the Trumps sending all the butlers home before Biden arrived, so there was nobody to open the door and stuff like that. Like, just everything about it was just like watching a soap opera.
Scorched earth, really, wasn't it? He scorched the earth on the way out. Is it getting nothing?
I don't know. It's a lot of pomp. It's a lot of bread and circuses. It was nice to be able to make, as I said, normal jokes about the US, rather than have to make these like through your fingers and hope that your man wasn't going to, you know, grab the nuclear football or something. So that was my main takeaway from it. I don't think America has healed. I don't think America is less polarized, and I don't think America is on the road to even being less polarized right now. I do think when you look at, I don't know, I do think there's going to be a problems are still going to be ahead. I think you've got a militia that's one of the that are basically the most armed people walking the streets of major US cities, and I think some of them do want trouble. And we're going back to the guys in The Intercept this week to talk about what's happening. Sorry, Linda, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, did you see the amount of guns the guy had who had the cable ties in the Capitol? Mm-hmm. Like, there were 30-odd weapons there. It's madness that the only thing that stops you owning that many guns is how much you want to spend on guns. Like, that's craziness.
I think it's also reflective of, like, you know, America catches a cold, everybody else sneezes. I think it's reflective of politics also in Europe. There's kind of an upheaval at the moment, and I think that's entirely down to COVID. And I think even if we get COVID under control, there's a whole political storm to come where people have had enough of this system and want something more equitable and fair.
I think what, and like, obviously, you know, I've been talking to a good few people over in the States, and they're so relieved. But, you know, Trump didn't come from nowhere. And I think all he did, to be honest, was just expose, really, like, and say it out, say what clearly a huge amount of the States thinks and how they think. And he wasn't like some accident. He was because of years of the Democrats in the US being fucking weak and pathetic and going along with this kind of the neoliberalism that the Republicans love and, you know, created. And I think hopefully, you know, you have Biden recognizing that and thinking, okay, well, we can't just go back to, you know, polite corporate Democrat. We actually have to make people's lives better. But I would worry that he won't. Because it's, you know, because it's not just one person as well. It's generations and generations of inherited wealth, inherited racism, of power dynamics that just cannot be shifted so with electing one person, you know, with and changing a whole White House. And I think, I don't know, like, Biden really got elected, or I think a lot of his success, and, you know, you look at Georgia as well, is because, like, you had people like Stacey Abrams decide, right, let's get people voting. Let's get the vote out. You had huge drives across reservation land to get people to vote for Biden. And I think if they're ignored and betrayed, like, why would they bother again?
And that is really, really powerful. And actually, the point is made in the comments as well. On a little note, I got somehow managed to get an email address for Isabel Wilkerson, who wrote the book Caste and the Ties That Bind on the US and the history of slavery. So I'm trying to beg her agent to get her to come on the bloody podcast to talk about it, because there is a generational legacy, and the intergenerational wealth that wealth divide, that person of color divide, that Muslim community, all of these communities that are there are seen as second class. And this is what's happened in the US. The idea that there that white people are going to be a minority in 2042 freaked out a lot of people, and they still talk about it now. There are some positives. Let's be, like, you know, whether it's symbolism or not, there are some positives. I mean, he will, you know, he's re-signed immediately to the Paris Climate Accord. You know, all of these executive orders that have been done, that's all really positive. Do we think that it's going to be system changing? No, because you saw how happy Wall Street was when he won. So that tells you all you need to know about it. It's been mentioned as well, also in the comments, the Navalny protests in Russia. Linda, you were watching this as well.
Yeah, I just think that this is one to really watch. So you had people out protesting in minus 50 degrees. They were using snowballs as weapons to pelt the police. And in Russia, like, you have to remember, you can be, like, they will take you, they will arrest you, and you will disappear and you will never be seen again. And to do that, like, shows the strength of and the size of these protests. Like, Putin Putin's got problems. And it's just fascinating to watch it happen. When he has, like, they basically had a dictatorship for so long, that people are starting to rise up now. And I think that's going to be one to watch now over the next few weeks, and see what happens. Like, what's going to happen ultimately to Navalny is, anybody's guess. Like, you know, Putin does what Putin wants to do.
One of the points I saw from, it was someone from RT. So, you know, RT is obviously the Russian state media, but nonetheless, we can all point fingers and, but also know that the media can be like that all over the globe. But one of the points was, well, if we really wanted him dead, he'd be dead. And that was said by a serious journalist, was more or less saying, look, we wouldn't have missed if we were going to go, you know. Martin, did you want to come in?
Yeah, I think Linda's 100%. That's one to watch. And I don't think it's on the media's eye is really on it. But I do think it's one to watch. Russians got it all very fast. You know, they got capitalism very fast. They got the divide between rich and poor came extremely quickly. And it's a harsh, harsh divide. I just think it's unfortunate that they're arguing about two very wealthy men. You know, I'd like to see something more grassroots than arguing over which wealthy man should be in charge.
Well, we'll watch that space, and we will actually try and get the right guests. It's always important to me, because sometimes we just jump in and all of a sudden someone turns around. You do realize, you know, it's like trying to cover this and someone say the enemy of my enemy is my friend, or you get all that. We just want to make sure we cover it properly. But yeah, no, you're right to keep an eye on it. We've flown through that, which is great. So I'm going to wrap the actual podcast for this week. And we were going to, so listeners, just be mindful that if you want to join us for this, it is patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We do then open the mics up to the people who are here in the audience and see if anybody has any questions. And I can tell you the comment section has been hopping. Thanks so much for listening, folks.